Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic, and I am so excited about the interview I have today. This person in the last year and a half has become one of the biggest names in magic, and recently has become one of the biggest names in magic for lay people as well as magicians. He has literally, I don't want to say come out of nowhere, because that's not the case, but he has, in the last year and a half, dominated magic, dominated YouTube, dominated social media. He's now been seen by literally millions of people all over the world, and he's literally shining bright, and I cannot wait to talk to him. It's been probably one of my most requested interviews on this channel for a long time. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Jack Rhodes. How are you doing, Jack? Are you okay?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm excited. I'm so excited.
That was some build-up. I think everybody should lower their expectations immediately.
Not at all. And I said to you off camera just before we started that, you know, it's just, if you ever wanted to know the difference between me as a YouTuber with my 20,000 subscribers and you, just look at the background. I've got a whiteboard. You've got all of that. Like, it's
but I spent half an hour arranging all this and going, does the lighting look good? That's the difference. That says more about me than you, Craig, to be fair.
But thanks for doing the interview. I know you're super busy. You're pumping out content almost as much as anybody I know. And I know you've got a ton of other stuff going on in the background as well. So thanks for finding the time to do this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Long time fan of the channel, so it's nice to be on.
You know what's hilarious? I'm a fan of yours as well. I'm a huge fan. And you're probably at this point my favorite YouTuber. I love watching your material. I love the very clever way that you present stuff. And I want to get into all of that. I want to get into social media. I want to get into YouTube. I want to get into what you're doing right now. But like, what I'd like to do first of all, if I can, is talk about like kind of where you got into magic, because it feels like you've kind of exploded onto the scene in the last couple of years. But watching your videos, you know, to put no finer point on it, you've got skills. Like, you have serious chops. You can see that when you see you do your stuff online. So you've been doing this a long time, but I don't know your backstory. So maybe we could kind of have a little bit of an origin story, how you got into magic. Where did it all, where did this all come from?
Yeah, pretty cliched, really. It was my granddad, obviously, the granddad that got you into magic. But he didn't really do much tricks. He was like, it's always been a bit of a rite of passage in our family that everybody can do like a riffle shuffle and a chalier cut. No matter who you are in the family, everybody could do a one-handed chalier cut and a riffle shuffle, pretty much. So there's always like a pack of cards lying around the house. And my granddad had learned the odd like self-working trick. And when I was like 8 years old, he sort of would do things and like, you know, where's the coin out? It's in this hand and all this stuff. And it was like very big. He wasn't a magician. He just had an interest in sleight of hand. And my granddad was always one of these guys that skilled in a lot of different things. Like, he was just a normal working class bloke, but he had so much knowledge about so many different things. And I think he really instilled this interest in magic and also interest in like learning lots of different things, which you've kind of touched on there with like editing and stuff. I'm pretty good at a few different things, but the magic, when I was a kid, that was like the thing I got obsessed with from about the age of 10 for a few years. I would literally just be in my bedroom in front of the mirror, like a lot of magicians were as kids, just obsessively practicing sleight of hand, Googling tricks, you know, and just, but I would never perform. Like my downfall was the presentation. I was like I'm an introvert. And I think when I was a kid, I'd obsessively do all the sleight of hand stuff. And then when it came to actually doing it for anybody, I didn't have any interest in that. I just wanted to learn the skill. And then I had all different sorts of hobbies. I was on and off with magic for a while, and I learned, like, I played lots of different instruments. I did clay animation for a while, where I like animated little puppets and stuff. I had all these weird little hobbies where, like, none of them were like team activities. There was no like, I did play a bit of football, but all the stuff I was good at was the stuff I just did by myself obsessively. And yeah. then, I went to started working at this firm that I've just left, but when I was 18, I joined that spot, and then there was a magician in the office. Shout out to Paul, because he'll be watching this probably. But he kind of got me back into it. We used to have Magic Wednesdays. We'd have like we'd get all the office lot, and we'd all go into this conference room, and we'd almost do like a right, you do a trick, I'll do a trick, and it got me back into the performing side of things, and I really enjoyed it. And then I started doing weddings and parties with him and another guy as Lyric's wedding magicians. So it's three of us, so it's just a bit of a laugh. And then part of me, if we're going full origin story, part of me then was like, okay, I'm a little bit sick of doing the close-up stuff. I'm, you know, I've kind of feel like I've got to where I want to with this. I want to try something that's really a challenge. And I saw that they were doing a stand-up comedy gig for charity in a pub near me. And I was like, that sounds like a challenge. So I went and did 10 minutes in an open mic night, nearly died on my ass. It went okay. It was like half comedy, half magic. And it was like, wow, the buzz from that was so much more than the buzz from anything I'd done before, like live stuff. So then I almost binned off the close-up magic, and I just started doing stand-up comedy in the Northwest Circuit. I was doing gigs in Liverpool, Manchester. I'm from the Lake District, so these were like, even though that sounds quite close, that's like a two-hour drive to get to Liverpool. So when I was, I don't know how that happened then. That's my computer going, you're doing a good job, carry on. Yeah, so I was like driving to these gigs was becoming a bit of a problem, and I did that for about a year. And I'd travel to Manchester and back. I'd get back home at 1 a.m. I'd be up at 5:30 in the morning to go to work. So it's like, it's just, that was never going to be a career prospect, was doing the comedy, but I just really enjoyed doing it. And then COVID hit. Obviously no gigs for anyone. I didn't really do any Zoom gigs. I wasn't interested. And I actually realized that when I was at home, I was like, actually, I don't miss the traveling. And it also made me realize how lucky I was to be in a stable job that wasn't affected by lockdowns. And so that was like, oh, okay, maybe I am okay in my normal 9 to 5. I should probably stick doing that. Then I started making videos on YouTube. They weren't even magic related at the start. I was doing I called them Art of Jack, which is a play on Art Attack for any international people watching. Art Attack was a show I watched as a kid where this artist would do all sorts of different stuff. Yeah, legend. Yeah. Great. So I did Art of Jack, right, where I was doing caricatures of celebrities and doing like comedy roasts of them. So it's like a whole new weird format. They didn't do very well, but they were all right. And I filmed them in my spare room. Then I started doing more magic stuff, and I was just experimenting. I was just sat at home in lockdown. I had all this creative energy I wanted to do something with. And then I really started to get into the YouTube game, really enjoyed making videos, the editing side of it. It brought back what I was doing as a kid with the clay animation on Windows Movie Maker, and I was learning a whole new skill, and I could get obsessed with this new thing now. And then the YouTube thing just sort of slowly ticked over and over. I had the odd viral thing. I made a parody where I pretended to go on Penn and Teller Fools. I was pulling my thumb off and cutting to them with a standing ovation, just silly stuff like that. That's probably where a lot of people know me from originally. And then like that was one hit wonder, and then I do other things and don't do very well. And then just over time it started, I was like, okay, this is actually working now. I reckon I could probably do this and make a decent living if I just could commit the time to it. But I was like working a normal job, trying to sustain normal social relationships and with friends and family, easier said than done. And also trying to make a YouTube channel tick over in the spare couple of hours I had every night. And I couldn't, there's no way I could make the jump and go full time doing that with the hours that I had. And then I basically last year, I had the opportunity to work every day in my day job for 5 months to earn a load of money. And then I could take a sabbatical, a career break for 9 months, knowing that if I didn't make this YouTube thing work out in that time, it doesn't matter because I've saved up enough money that financially I can go back to my job. So yeah. My work was really good. I used to be a nuclear engineer, and the firm I worked at was like really quite open with it. Yep, you crack on, you do your thing. And if it doesn't work out, come back to the job you've got. So I was really lucky. Yeah, really lucky to be in that. Yeah. So that was such a good opportunity. And it was like, oh, there's no pressure then. If it doesn't work out, fine. I'll go back to my job, which was a nice, a good job, interesting job, really well paid, all them things. But if it does work out, then great. And, you know, if I don't do this while I had the opportunity to do it, I'd probably look back on my life and regret not doing it. So this, like, when you talk about all the past year and a half, you've blown that up, it's like, it's weird how it's literally from the moment I went, right, I'm going to do this full time. That's kind of when things have started escalating. And so now we're at this point where just 6 weeks ago, I put my noticing at work.
Oh, did you do quit. The 9 months and then put your notice in, or did you go back for a little bit? Or
I put my notice in at the end of the 9 months, so I never went back. But to be fair, the first, I think 2 months in, I was like, I can't go back. This has unlocked a whole new world for me. Like, doing this stuff full time, I will find a way of making money, because I can't now. Now that I've had a taste of this, I can't go back to doing my normal job.
Yeah.
That would have been it. Yeah. It was... Until you do it, you don't realise. And then I was like, wow, there is more to life than your 9 to... You just get stuck in that routine, Monday to Friday, same hours, same people, same crack. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Everybody hates Mondays. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, no matter what day is, every day is great. It's a weird thing. Such a shift.
Well, I'm going to ask you a few questions. We're going to unpack a few things there, because that was amazing. And what a story.
Sorry, I proper unloaded everything on you there.
No, this is great. I want to ask you a couple of things. So you said that you kind of put a pin in close-up magic and went and started doing stand-up comedy, and then COVID hit, and that's when you started making videos. Did you ever get back to doing close-up magic? Like, or was the focus on the stand-up comedy? And if that's the case, what made you kind of go back towards magic when you started the YouTube channel?
Good question. I didn't go back to the close-up stuff. Once I'd done the stage stand-up stuff, I was like, oh, that is... To me, that was like, people have turned up for a show and they paid money to see a show and they want to see me. This is great. Whereas the close-up stuff I was doing, weddings and stuff, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, but obviously you turn up, a lot of people don't want to see you. They're not coming to see a show. They've come to see the wedding, or they're chatting with the family that they've not seen in ages. And so it always felt like you try to convince people to watch you. And suddenly I go to a gig and people are there to watch me. This is amazing. I don't have to fight for that interest in the first place. So I never went back to the close-up gigs after that. I still had an interest in doing stuff, and I would still practice close-up tricks because I was doing this on video. So like, I still kept the close-up chops. But then the video stuff, if we're talking about the stand-up side, I think what I realized was, although I'm an all right stand-up comedian without any magic, and I'm an all right magician without any comedy, I think my strong suit is when I combine the two. That's where I can put a unique spin on it. So I felt like my strength was the two things together.
And did you do that? Like, because you talked about doing the stand-up comedy circuit. Did you do comedy magic as well, or was it just full-on comedy clubs? And if not, at what point did you kind of go, well, okay, I want to do stand-up and comedy. I want to start doing stand-up comedy shows with magic?
Yeah, it started off because when I did that first gig, it was probably mostly magic with a few lines thrown in. And the more I did it, the more I wanted to challenge myself and go, right, I want to... Because magic felt safe. Like, at a comedy gig, if anybody's never done stand-up comedy gig, I recommend just doing one just to really experience it, because you think you've had a bad gig until you go to a pub and there's five people that... And it's like, oh, this is awful. So magic always felt safe, because even if the jokes don't get a reaction, I know I'm going to get the trick right and the trick will get a reaction. So it felt safe. And so I wanted to go out and it not feel safe. I wanted to go out. And so that, you know, I was probably doing 80% magic, 20% comedy at the start. And then by the end, I was doing 80% pure stand-up comedy. And at the end, I'd do a quick trick that was almost a throwaway thing. Yeah. But I'd talk about being a magician. So I'd do jokes about being a magician or having this weird hobby that I used to do as a kid. And so it set me up to do a trick at the end, almost like, I don't really do it anymore, but do you want to see a quick something? And by that point, you've sort of won them over. It's the end of the act. Oh, yeah, we'll see a trick. Whereas it always felt like, especially when I was with other pros who were doing it, it's funny, this whole comedian versus magician thing. A lot of comics were like, they looked down on the magic thing. And so that almost taught me to like, okay, I'll suppress the magic thing. I need to be pure here. And now I've come round again. I'm like, no, there's different. It's the context of the thing. So I never went out to these comedy gigs as I'm a magician. It was more, I'm a comedian. Also, I do a little bit of magic. Do you want to see a trick? And so it was like that. So by the end of it, it was mainly stand-up comedy and a little bit of magic. And it's kind of gone full circle now.
And do you think like learning how to do stand-up comedy will make, if there's somebody watching this that wants to be a professional magician and they've just done magic their whole life, do you think pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, learning how to do stand-up comedy, will that make you a better magician?
100%. I'm telling you now, if I hadn't done the comedy thing, I wouldn't be doing any of this now. Not even the YouTube thing. The comedy thing was such a shift in how I present myself, how I perform. Like, you do it. I was every magician at the close-up gigs. I would do tricks that Everybody Magicians do. You know, I do Omni Deck and the stuff that works. And then when you do the comedy stuff, it really teaches you about being original, because in the comedy game, if you're doing somebody else's material, they will let you know about it, and it's a big no-no. And if, you know, if you're doing lines that another comedian's saying and you've clearly stolen them, it's a big no-no. And so it was such a shift from the magic world where everybody's doing the same lines, hold out your hand, know the clean hand, you know. Like, I was on a podcast with some Australian magicians and they're quoting the same lines. It's the same lines worldwide. It's mad. Like, in the comedy world, if that was the case, it'd be weird. So that, it really taught me about being original. And it also made me very self-aware, because I'd film every gig. And like, the moment you go out in front of a stage of people, an audience of people, and they don't know who you are, but they've got the expectation, I've got a thumbs down now.
I'm loving this.
Oh, I don't know. Listen, it looks like I know what I'm doing with tech, but when this goes on, I've got no clue. But it taught me about being self-aware. I'd film every single gig to see what bits didn't get laughs, which bits did get laughs, and then cut them bits out and, you know, rework it. And by the end of that, I was like, I'm so used to seeing myself, I can now write material for myself because I know who I am as a performer. And that's a massive thing, which I didn't get as a close-up magician, because you're just in the thick of it. It's a working gig. You've got no chance to film yourself. It's rare that you can get someone to film you while you do a trick. But if you can do that, by the way, I'd recommend anybody does that. The moment you start watching yourself practice and perform, you pick up on so many little things, like just filler lines that you didn't need to say, ums and ahs, oh, that moment was a bit shit, I'll cut that bit out. There's so many things you can learn from filming yourself, and that's what the comedy world taught me. And so it wasn't much of a big shift when I performed to camera for like a YouTube thing, because now it's like, all right, this feels like the same as performing to a room full of people, because you can't really see them anyway. I'm almost performing to myself and I'm waiting for the laugh.
That makes absolute sense. That's brilliant. Okay, so here's a question. So you get to the point where you've got 9 months to make this work, and you know you've got 9 months to make it work. Do you kind of, is your plan, right, I'm going to focus on YouTube, that seems to be the biggest thing, or do you go, well, COVID's finished now, we're out of COVID, I had a successful career as a stand-up comic, I did close-up magic, I'm just going to do whatever I can to get an income, like I'm going to go back on the stand-up circuit, I'm going to go and build a website and get some wedding gigs, I'm going to do YouTube, or you just kind of, like, what's your mentality? You know you want to make it work, you kind of set yourself a nine-month window before you have to make that decision. What was your kind of approach with this in terms of what you were going to do? Because you have got the skill set. You could, I don't want to say it's taking the easy way out, it's not, but you could take the easy way out and like, right, I'm going to do this gig and this gig and this gig and this gig, and then I'm going to edit all day during the day and create videos and kill yourself for 9 months. But I don't think you did that. Like, I'd love to know what your thought process was.
My thought process was, the first month, because I'd just worked 5 months, 12-hour shifts every day with no days off, my first month was just, I need to chill out, I need to have a holiday, get my head back in the game. So the first month was a write-off. Then the second month, I absolutely shit myself. Because I was like, oh, I actually need to start making some money, because I can't live off my savings for, like, although I have saved up, this is going to be horrendous if I don't start making money. So then I was like, okay, close-up gigs, stick with everything. Let's see if I can get back on the stand-up circuit. The thing is with the stand-up circuit, especially at the level I was doing like middle 10 or 20 minutes. You know, like you'd have an opener, you'd have a couple of middle acts and then a headliner at the usual comedy night. You're not getting paid much. You're like maybe 50 quid. And it costs more in fuel to get there and back where I live. So the comedy game was never about the money. That was purely about the enjoyment. So I was like, well, I can't really do that as a thing. That'd have to be for my own enjoyment. So it was either I focus on the close-ups gigs while doing the social stuff. And I did a couple of close-ups and I was like, you know what? I don't know if I'd be that happy if this is what my career became. Because as great as this is, I'm probably better with a stable income, because the enjoyment I get out of these close-up gigs isn't enough to justify the shift from a well-paid job that's secure with all the different benefits and stuff. And so the YouTube thing, like, was always the thing that is like my best creative expression, and I felt like this is what I really want to do. So it just then became a thing of, can I make the content stuff work within that 9 month period, and that might unlock other doors. And what I learned over the 9 months was, you can never really predict what opportunity is going to come out of the blue. Like, there was stuff where, I mean, within a month, and this isn't an exaggeration, on Instagram, in 1 month, I went from 2,000 followers to 100,000 followers. Oh. Just, yeah. basically off two videos. And I was like, okay, this is... at that point, I was like, right, this is a write-off, this whole thing. This could, anything could happen now. And actually then, I've gone from 100,000 to 125,000 or something. So like it's slowed... it's just this massive viral spike and then it kind of slowed down. And it's like, this is mad. Like anything could happen at any time. And then off the back of that, I was getting like... Giacomo, clothing brand in the UK, were after talented people called Jack, and they happened to... I happened to go viral at the same time as they were looking for... So then I ended up doing this little brand deal thing with Giacomo where I sort of did tricks for them in their clothes, and it went, you know, they did their thing with it and I didn't really see it. But stuff like that that you can never predict was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the BGT thing came up. I never planned to do BGT. It was like...
obviously, at time of filming, it's just gone on. But you probably got involved with doing the audition for that like partway through this 9-month period or early on in the...
Yeah. So the first involvement was in October, I think. So pretty early on into the thing. Well, a couple of months into the thing, at which point I started doing, like, it started getting a bit bigger online and stuff. And then the BGT opportunity came up and I was like, yeah, why not? Like, you know, if it works out, great. That's another reason that I can, you know, because they filmed the auditions in February. So, and I had to put my notice in by March if I was going to quit. So like that would have been a good thing to, if that goes well, then that's another reason to say, okay, this is going to work out. And if it don't go well, then I've not lost anything because I don't really care what people think. So if it went badly and I got made to look a mug, well, I'd kind of took the piss anyway because I'd done this green screen parody where I pretended to be on the show. So either way, it's a funny story, whether it goes well or not. Like, so I've got nothing to lose. The whole process has been, I've got nothing to lose. I've got nothing to lose by taking a 9-month break because I've saved up enough money. So if it don't work out, fine. I'm glad I did it. Like this whole, I don't really have any ambition to be, you know, the next big thing or whatever. Or I'm just like, okay, let's see what happens if I do that. Like put your mind to it and see what happens. And that's been this whole thing. And this whole thing, that's why I'm saying every opportunity that's come up, I would never have predicted. And anybody who's looking at this thinking of doing a similar thing, like, you can predict certain things, but there will be opportunities that come out of nowhere, that come left field. You know, like this Giacomo thing, BGT. There's a couple other things. And I was like, this is mad the way it's gone. I would never have thought it would. And this fast as well in such a condensed period. Because 9 months, really, to turn a hobby into a living in 9 months is quite a... I was shitting myself that it's a stretch in it. So
it really is. It's a difficult thing to get to make happen. And I'm so impressed that you have. So I want to talk about BGT, but before I do, back to the YouTube stuff for a bit. Like, your YouTube channel has blown up. And I think one of the reasons is, and I mentioned this to you off camera, you tend to find that when you look at a YouTuber that's a magician, they kind of fall into one of two categories. The first category is somebody that produces content just for the magic community, like me, magic reviews, interviews with magicians, you know, that sort of stuff, which is fine, but I'm never going to be a huge YouTuber because it's a very niche kind of pool of which I'm kind of producing content for. Then you've got, you've got other YouTubers that kind of do a little bit like Chris Ramsey, that's puzzles and everything and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then you've got a lot of working professional magicians that just put performance videos out there. But generally, they're not really getting many views. It's not something that they're really kind of pushing and it doesn't work, even though they're aiming that stuff at lay people. What you've done, and I've never really seen anyone else do this to the level that you have, the content that you produce, it's content that really appeals to magicians. But at the same time, it really appeals to lay people as well. Like, I told you this story. Before you went on BGT, I was doing sort of mix and mingle at a corporate event. And two times at that corporate event, I was doing magic. And they were like, oh, we love magic. Have you seen Jack Rhodes? We love his YouTube channel. I was like, oh, you're a magician. Nope, just love magic and we think he's great. We subscribe. And you know, that kind of said, wow, okay, so there's lay people out there that love your content, that are just watching it, not to learn, but just because it's enjoyable content to them. But magicians really enjoy it because it's completely unique and the way you present it, it's very, very different to anything that's seen before. And that's probably one of the reasons why you've got so big so quickly. But was that done by design, or was that kind of just a fluke that happened?
That was always intentional to try and appeal to a wider market than just magicians. I mean, going back to the stand-up comedy thing, I was doing magic for people that didn't necessarily like magic. So that taught me that there's something here for being able to present a niche to people that don't necessarily like that niche. Like if you're a juggler and you can add a bit of comedy in there, people that don't like juggling can still enjoy it because they enjoy comedy. So it kind of, that already taught me at the start. And when I was doing this YouTube thing, and I was like, right, I need to make a living out of this. Like you say, your magician demographic is a capped market. Like there's only so many magicians that can watch, you know, if you've got every single magician watching on a planet, that's still probably not enough, I don't know, to make a living off it just off AdSense, off YouTube. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, it's still nice to appeal to magicians because I'm a magician and I would like to make content that I want to watch. So yeah. I'll make stuff that magically is strong most of the time. Sometimes I do stuff that's a bit of a piss take. But at the end of the day, my ultimate goal is to appeal to an audience that isn't magicians. I want to appeal to that bigger demographic because that is where I can actually make a living. And when it comes to like, yeah, I mean, that's what really worked, I think, I keep going on the PGT here, but you're right with the YouTube thing. I do try and, from day one, I've tried to position myself to appeal to people that aren't just magicians, because that's definitely a wider market. And I think, like I say, with the comedy thing, if you can, you know, I'd like to think that if I start doing live shows and stuff, there'll be people that turn up who are fans of magic, and there'll be people who turn up that are fans of comedy. And they might not necessarily be interchangeable, but they're both coming in for different reasons, but they both enjoy the end product. There's like there's a Venn diagram, what I want to make and what people want to watch. And I need to find my little slot in the middle. That's the challenging part.
And was it difficult to create the content that you, because as I said, one of the things that's really unique about you is the approach that you take towards the videos. You know, you go, you're presenting really exceptional sleight of hand. Like, you know, you watch you and you go, okay, yeah, Jack's got a lot of chops here. You can just tell that you're very, very skillful. But and sometimes you'll present it just as, you know, hey, look at this. This is amazing. But every video that I can think of, there's a twist to it. There's something unique. There's something different. There's a narrative that you're trying to spin. You almost take us on a little journey over the course of a minute or two. Like,
yeah.
A, was it difficult to find inspiration for those sort of videos? Because, and two, do you ever feel pressure that you've now kind of set a bar that you're constantly having to hit? Because if you just put a video of you going, hey, I'm Jack. Hey, look at this. It's amazing. There's a trick. Thanks very much. Join me next week. People are going to be like, well, okay, great. But, you know, it's not what I normally see. Do you know, is it kind of painting yourself into a little bit of a corner that is, you've got a bar that you need to hit is what I'm trying to say, because you've done stuff.
Yeah. I've never really thought about that actually. And now you've made me think, oh shit. Yeah. I've set a bar too high. No, but I think actually the truth is, I am not interested in making stuff that I'm not proud to look back on. Like, I want to have a library of content that I look back on and go, yeah, I'm proud of 99% of them videos. And there will be the odd one here and there that, you know, it hasn't aged well, or I don't know, it's like, I wouldn't do that now, or I would have done it differently, or, you know, I did that because it was a brand deal and it's not, there's a bit of a deadline on it and I had to rush it out. But for the majority of stuff, I want to make stuff that I'm proud of, and I want to look back on it and go, that's stuff that I, you know, it was worthwhile doing. And so it is a challenge to try and I think the main thing is, like, in going back to the stand-up game, my act, I was doing 10, 20 minutes, and it was the same stuff, honing the same thing, night in, night out, all the time, just try to trim down the fat, get to the funny bit, keep your gag per minute rate as high as you can. Constantly honing the same thing. And now the main thing with the content game is constantly being creative, new stuff, new ideas, new formats, new spin on this, new script for that. Same trick as last time, but let's do a different angle on it. That is a challenge because it's constantly being creative. But that's the thing that I really find quite fulfilling. If I like, and actually, touch wood, I've not had a point where I've been like, I've run out of ideas. Like, there's always something in the back of my head. And I think that's where possibly my strength is for like coming up with different twists or formats on things. But yeah, it's a challenge because it is, like you say, it's the same. As opposed to the comedy game, it's just new stuff all the time. Which is why, like, I've got now an interest in doing an hour show would be really a new challenge, because it's like, right, let's apply all this creativity, but one thing, hone that down now. Make instead of lots of nice little things, one massive nice thing would be quite nice that takes a few months to make or something. But
that's amazing. Where do you get your inspiration from? Like, the latest video I've seen of yours was this morning. And it was one where you were doing a Rubik's Cube smash into a bunch of Smarties.
Yeah.
And you were explaining how it was done. You were exposing it, the out-of-body thing. And it was just brilliantly done. And I was watching that and I was like, where do you even come up with, like, the inspiration behind that? Like, I could understand once you get the inspiration, kind of thinking, okay, I can do this and I can do this, and oh, it'd be great if I eat so sweet and let's reverse and that. But where do you find the inspiration for that?
It's hard because each video is a whole different process, but like that one, that would start with me going, okay, I want to make a video that's a false explanation for something that's funny. It's a ridiculous explanation for a trick. Right, okay, well, this video, it needs to be a strong hook. So it needs to be a trick. If people are watching it and they actually think they're going to learn it, it needs to be a good, solid trick. What's going to look good on camera? Okay, and smashing a Rubik's Cube in its eyes, that's a good trick. That looks good on camera. Instantly, within the first 2 seconds, you've seen something amazing. Oh, and he's promised to teach us it. Great, right, now they're in. Right, so now I need to figure out a funny way of explaining how you smash a cube up into Smarties. And there's all sorts of different ways now. So I'm thinking, well, I don't know, you could have, maybe it's a Rubik's Cube that is made of Smarties and it just looks like a Rubik's Cube. Maybe it's a paper thing. And you, so there's always, and now you, now the comedy brain kicks in. So I've worked out what the format is, what the hook is. Well, all right, what if you could stop time? What if you could stop time? And, or maybe it's like an out of body experience. And I think, well, what, like that scene in that Doctor Strange film where he pops out? I wonder if you could do something in the spiritual realm. And then once you've got that idea, then it's like, well, what can the interaction be? What funny moments can you get out of that? I'm now doing a magic trick. I've entered the spiritual realm. What things can we introduce that make it even more absurd? Like if I pick up a Smartie and I eat it and I die, you can't do it. Yeah. So then once you've got the thing, another thing, and it's almost like the butterfly effect of all these random things. And now I've got so many different ideas, but I need to pick the right ones and put it in a cohesive thing. So it's like, I don't know. I don't struggle with ideas, weirdly. And I think it's because I consume a lot of film and TV, and I get a lot of inspiration from comedians and like the Doctor Strange thing. If I hadn't seen Doctor Strange, that video probably wouldn't exist. Just because that moment where, I don't know if you've seen the film, but Doctor Strange gets pushed out of his physical body and I was floating around. If I hadn't seen that, I probably wouldn't have come up with that idea. So like, I'm always looking for different stuff in the outside world that can relate back to this thing that I'm doing, that people can relate to.
That's amazing. And what's your favourite video that you've ever put together so far?
That's like picking your favourite child, isn't it? I imagine. I don't have any kids yet, but there's a couple that I look back on and go, I think they represent significant uplifting quality. The first one, I did an entire video, a 5-minute magic act, that halfway through you're watching it, you then get told that it's all filmed in reverse. And now you're going, all right, okay. And now, because you know it's been filmed in reverse, I'm now playing around with time. So when I drop something, you know for that to have been filmed, it must have floated up into my hand. And it's this whole like very, and then if you watch it in reverse, it'll make any sense. It was based off the film Tenet. It's probably a bit up its own ass. There's not much comedy, but it's visually, it's quite a nice thing, yeah. And that was like 6 weeks of practice for this routine, learning how to do things in reverse. I was learning how to do a retention vanish in reverse just for this one video that then got maybe like 5,000 views. It wasn't worth the effort, but I look back at it and I'm proud of that one. And there was another video I did that was on about the future of magic and what it means to do camera tricks and stuff. And I'm chucking stuff in and out of screens and I mean, it's hard to explain really, but there's a couple of videos like that where I look back at it and go, wow, that was definitely something that I really am proud of. But really the stuff I find the most challenging ones are the ones where I'm really trying to hit the, like, they're probably videos that magicians appreciate, and it's maybe it's too magic specific for a general population to really enjoy. And so I think the videos I probably really do like are the ones that do hit that both markets. I did a video recently called The Sleight of Hand Paradox, where it's like a bit of a video essay on about the history of magicians and sleight of hand, but told in a unique and funny way. So even if you don't like sleight of hand, it's still entertaining. And I think they're the videos where I'm like, I like them, because that's the difficult thing, to hit both markets there and pull it off and have a cohesive video.
Absolutely. That's a really good answer. I want to ask you two more things, then we can move on. First question is, so talking about your videos, one of my favorite things to watch is you do a lot of kind of almost slow motion videos where you're standing there with a guy, don't know who he is, and you're both watching a trick and seeing how it looks like in slow motion. I'm assuming this guy's kind of a knowledgeable layperson, because you see, you know, I'm guessing, but he might not be, I don't know. But
yeah,
how do you pick the tricks that you do? Because the ones that I've seen, they look as good in slow motion as they do in full speed. Or if they don't, you can't really see what's happening. It's like there's no exposure there. I was looking at them and thinking, oh, this is going to be hard to do and not expose stuff. But you don't, because it either looks incredible in slow motion or you can't really see what's going on, but it doesn't look like it's meant to look. How much thought was put into that? And do you, because I love those, I think they're great. And getting a chance to see some of that stuff in slow motion is really good.
Yeah, the slow motion one's an interesting one, because that's like, them videos now represent to me trying to do this as a living. So we're on about constantly coming up with creative new concepts. I still need a format that I can do consistently, because coming up with a new thing every week, it's just, well, my head can't take that. So if I can have new things, great. But if I can have a consistent format that I can repeat and they still do well views wise, then that is the way of unlocking this to make a career. I need to think of this as a business as well. So the slow-mo videos to me represent, because the fact, like the first one did super well, the shorts did super well. I then made another one, and them slow-mo videos and the reels were part of the reason why a lot of my online stuff started blowing up at the same time. They just did really well, and it was a format that worked. And my mate Jamie, he's really good on camera now. He's not really a magician. He's a mate of mine that's kind of helped out with a few things. I did a video where I tried teaching him how to be a magician in 30 days. He had no experience. Then after a month, he went out and did street magic, and we filmed the whole process, made a documentary out of it. And he's got a grounding in magic, but he doesn't know too much that he can't, like, he's basically the layman in that scenario. And so it would be a different vibe if it was just me watching it back going, how great does this look? Oh, by the way, it's me doing it. Like, it needs to be someone else who's, so, but the slow motion ones, because I'm very aware that you can delve into too much exposure with a slow motion thing. Like, there are a few things that we have exposed, like the snap change. But I always make sure that they're like public domain stuff, or stuff that you can find a tutorial of if you're interested in it. But for the most part, especially if it's a market trick, I don't want to do any exposure. So there's been a few times where I filmed a trick, think it looks good in slow-mo, and then we watch it back and I'm like, oh, actually that reveals a lot. So like, that just won't make the cut. So there's a lot of stuff that gets filmed that doesn't make it, because I don't want to be the one that's exposing magic. But basically I've got to the point where I'm so wary of the camera angles and stuff, I can kind of look at a trick and go, yeah, that'll work in slow motion now. Or if it's like, there might be a routine with a coin in a ring, and there might be five moves and four of the moves look great, and the fifth is a bit iffy. I'm like, okay, well, this is okay, because this isn't an educational thing, but it's almost like showing off the skill that it takes to be a magician. So like that first video, when that went out, like, my dad is not really into the magic stuff. He likes the sleight of hand skill wise stuff. But he watched the video back and he was like, I had no idea it took that level of skill to pull off that trick, right? And we're talking about like a coin thing, something like a coin retention in slow motion. And you can't see anything. Or if you can, it's like, it just shows you how much practice has gone into it. So my main goal is that it always makes magic look good. It's never like, I've bought a box and this thing does the work for me. Look how great I am because I spent 25 quid on a self-working trick. It's never that. It's always, we're trying to make this look good, and people have gone in for magic, you're getting satisfied, and people who've come in for a bit of a crack to see us two have a joke and a laugh, you can still appreciate the skill that's gone into it. That's kind of the intention.
Don't you? Wow. And here's a question, and that's really good. But so when you, most people, when you think about, you're a very creative person. Now, when you think about magic and you think about creativity, a lot of the time it's like, right, I'm going to release a trick. I'm going to release a product. I'm going to release something to the magic community. Is that something that you've ever aspired to do? Because you're obviously very creative and the amount of ideas you've come up with YouTube are just insane. If you released a book purely on video ideas for social media, I would be the first in line to buy it. But I reckon if you probably sat down in a room, you'd be able to come up with some incredibly unique stuff to market to magicians. Is that like an aspiration for you? Is that something that you're not really that fussed about?
It's funny you mention that, because actually I've been putting together, I'm building a bit of an hour-long show, and this is the first time really that I'm sitting down and going, right, if I'm going to do this, I want to be doing stuff that nobody else is doing. And so I'm coming up with tricks that, like, I'm doing a card trick with a pack of crisps. I've got a pack of Doritos and I'm doing a card trick with a pack of Doritos, and they're picking a Dorito, put it back in a bag, and it flicks out and I catch it. Is that your, like, lots of different unique spins? And I'm like, oh, this would work as a marketed thing. But actually, I'm at the point now where I'm like, I don't want to release this because I want to get my bit out of it first. Mm. So maybe down the line, I might start marketing stuff. But like, I've never saw myself as somebody who wants to, like, almost like I said at the start, I don't really want to be the guy who's appealing to just magicians. And I feel like if I start selling tricks, I'm going down a road that not necessarily is where I want to end up. So if I was going to sell something, it'd probably be a course for like kids that want to get into magic, or people that the general public that, and I think I'd go that more down that route, and maybe I can add some stuff in there that would bring in the magicians that want to learn how to do a card trick with a pack of crisps or something. But that's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, saying that, I have released a trick with, do you know Joel Dickinson?
Yes.
I released a trick years ago with him called the Magpie, which was like this routine with a coin and it changed into a ring, and then you pull the ring apart and it changed into a spoon. Lovely bit of sleight of hand. Really nice trick. But yeah, like, it don't really appeal to me at this stage. Maybe if things hadn't worked out the way they have and I was trying to find new, different ways of making money, I think possibly then I'd be like, okay, I need to channel this creativity in something that will actually generate money. But the way things have worked out, I'm kind of not in that game at the moment. Down the line, maybe. And maybe, like, writing a book would be quite a cool thing on creativity and for magicians to be, you know, maybe that would appeal to me down the line. But right now, there's that much stuff going on, I can't even think about selling tricks. So
I can understand that. And that to BGT, which I want to talk about. Now, first of all, before I talk about BGT, you obviously did the parody videos on BGT where you tried to convince the world that you auditioned for Britain's Got Talent. Now, yep. When you did those, did you know you were actually going to do audition for Britain's Got Talent, or was just
no idea
coincidence?
Yeah, I literally, right, like them videos, even the Penn and Teller Foolers one, the early days, right, I didn't have this set up. I was in my living room and I put a green cloth over my curtain rail and I filmed it on my iPhone 9. And I was just like, it was edited on my iPad. It was just like rough as a bear's ass, but let's get it out there because I think this is a funny idea. And so, like, there was never the intention that, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this to try and get on the show. And so when my setup started to get a bit more professional, this is my garage. I've converted into a studio. And then I got, like, a proper green screen, proper lighting. Oh, I can actually make a decent parody here. It almost looks like I am on stage. And so my latest one, I think I did, I went on pretending to be a deaf mind reader. It's like, I can read your mind, but I can't hear what you're saying. So, like, I was miscalling what they were thinking. And so it was just all this daft stuff. And then I pretended to be the Phantom. When that went viral, I pretended it was me in a swimsuit, or you can't see me, even though you plainly can. I never intended that, to be honest with you, naively, I didn't even think that the people on the show would see it. I'm in my own vacuum. I put it out. It's only me who sees it. I just think it's a funny thing to do. And then, like, I mean, a couple of years ago, I got approached to, based off the back of a parody, do you want to do the show? We think it's quite a good, unique thing that you've almost took the mickey out of us. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is and do it for real? And I was like, oh, yeah, that is quite a good thing. And then for one reason or another, it didn't work out. But then this time around, it was like, okay, this could work out. And yeah, like, what a unique situation that is. Because even if it goes badly, who cares? It's still a funny story that I made a parody and then did it for real. But if it goes well, then great. Either way, I'm making a video out of it. Like, again, nothing to lose. So why not just give it a shot? Because I might look back on this moment and go, oh, I should have done it when I could, while you were relevant.
That's absolutely 100%. And I'm really glad you had. Let's talk about the act. So you kind of said to me back in September, October, that's when you kind of made the decision to go on Britain's Got Talent. The act was incredible. I'm just going to put that out there. I thought it was amazing. Like, it was, it showed your personality in that you were, you know, you came across as very funny, but very likable, but not cheesy. Funny in a, you know, and I think that's probably your background in stand-up comedy coming through. You were able to connect with the audience immediately. You did a really strong effect, but then you had, you kind of almost did what you do on your videos, which you had a ridiculous kind of, this is how it worked. And then you had the thing at the end, which we can talk about. So did this all come together very early on? Did you kind of go, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have an audience that watch my YouTube channel. I want to kind of try to take what I do on there and do it on Britain's Got Talent? Or, like, what was your thought process? Because that's what you've done, and that's what I think made it so unique. You know, a lot of people will approach the desk and do sleight of hand and then go, thank you very much, or they'll be on stage and do illusions, and you kind of mixed everything up, but it was the whole presentation. I'm pretty sure that the judges weren't too sure what was going on at any point, to be perfectly honest. And
yeah,
anybody who likes you on YouTube, like, yeah, this is who we're falling in love with on YouTube. That's what we're seeing. It was great.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was such a different process, because, like, with the online stuff, like you say, I built up a little bit of a following. I can be myself, and if people want to watch it, great, and if they don't, fair, like, fine. But with BGT, it was like the challenge was, how do I do what I do online within the format of that show? Because there are certain constraints. You know, you can't be doing anything that's too wacky. Like, there's no chance that I was going to do the spiritual realm, smash a Smarties, like Rupert's giving it a Smartie. That would never work. So, like, how do I take that and fit it into the format of the show? And to be fair, working with Russ Stevens was a massive help on this. He's been he's the consultant behind the scenes at BGT. He's
Russ Stevens is phenomenal.
Yeah, really good guy. And he's got such a good brain for what works well on TV. So initially he approached me about the Phantom parody that I made, the swimsuit thing. And from there, that's where it was born. And so there was always this idea of doing something with a swimsuit. And yeah, I don't know. It was weird, because it was like, okay, I need to find a version of me that works on BGT, whilst also, like you say, demonstrating personality. To me, the main thing was the personality. I mean, really, the magic was pretty basic. It was the French kiss and a sub trunk, right? It's not like amazing magic. It's pretty basic, really. Although that, in some ways, I think that's a good thing, because now the only way is up in terms of the magic. You can't really get any more basic than what I did. But it was never about the magic for me. It was about, like, that show in particular. I think even if you were the world's best magician, you could still do badly on that show, because it's more about the person, the story behind the person. And I didn't want to go on with a sob story or anything, but I knew that the comedy thing was going to be the thing that set me apart, and doing it in a unique way. So yeah, that was the challenge, was like, right, how do I do what I do online, but in that format, and whilst getting the comedy across? And so there were so many, I think what the routine did, there was two things that were done intentionally. First one was, you can't really edit much of the act out, because nothing makes sense without seeing the full thing. So what you saw on TV is pretty much what happened on the night. There's a few lines here and there that got cut out. But yeah, you take any part of that act out and it doesn't make sense. So, like, intentionally it was done in the sense that this, if it goes well, this will be like at least a 7 or 8 minute segment, which is what you want, really. And then secondly, I forgot my second point. My head's gone. Let's pretend I just said there's one point.
Well, the first point was a good enough point.
Yeah. No, I think secondly, it was like, yeah, the comedy, no matter what the magic is, the comedy has to be strong enough on its own as well. Because I almost wanted them to look at me as much as a comedian as a magician. And so that, like, especially when you try to get votes, if there's like two magic acts in the final, the fans of magic across the country are splitting the votes between them two acts. Whereas if I'm a magic act and a comedy act, I can almost get the votes of the people that are into comedy as well. It's the same thing as this whole thing we'll talk about with YouTube, try to appeal to a bigger market than just fans of magic. That was always the intention when I did BGT as well. And so I did go on hoping it would go well. But if it didn't go well, then, you know, not lost anything. I've still done a funny thing with a swimsuit that fans of the channel will get, because that's what I did in the original parody.
And you know what's really weird? I'm pretty sure that the press and a lot of the general public actually think you were the Phantom. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I realized straight away it was like it was a joke. It was the setup, but like I'm pretty sure that like the press have like actually believed that this whole thing was you know, the person responsible for the Phantom.
Yeah, which I mean, I was a little bit gutted about that at first. I was like, oh no, they've missed the point. What happened there was when I say they cut out a couple of lines. One of the lines that they cut out was me. There's a moment in the routine where the two cards that have changed places now say I'm lying. And I go, I've been lying from the start. I've been lying about being the Phantom. I've been lying about so-and-so. They cut out the bit where I say I've been lying about being the Phantom. So it almost plays it as more, as it's almost like, oh, well, is he the Phantom or is he not? And so all the headlines came out that night. Oh, BGT recycling all that. The Phantom's been on before. They shouldn't be doing that. And I'm like, not actually been on before. It was me in a swimsuit. Surely you didn't think that was the actual Phantom. So yeah, that was the one thing that, again, things that happen that you don't expect. I never expected that to be the reception, but in some ways it did me a favor because I don't think the actor would have made any sort of headlines had that not been the case. You know, comedy magician does a nice routine on TV, ain't going to make a headline. So this whole Phantom thing probably has worked out well in my favor. And also it's funny for me that having done the parody, like, oh, actually, what? People actually think that was me. And if they Google me, like, the joke then becomes quite funny because they watch the original parody, me in a swimsuit, oh, it's clearly not him. But I had family members like, well, so hang on, you were actually on the show before, were you? I'm like, oh, no. Like, this is... But you know what? What was the biggest surprise is obviously part of the routine was me going, oh, none of my family like me like magic. My dad's not impressed. He calls me a part-time wizard. Sorry, full-time moron. Right. And I was doing all this bit about my family not being fans of it. And I'm sort of, oh, I'm here by myself. And I thought that was quite clearly a joke. I saw a headline that came out and it was like, oh, Ant and Dec had to step in as BGT act snubbed by parents. And I was like, what? This journalist had written a paragraph. And it's like, Britain's Got Talent star Jack Rhodes expressed how his parents expressed a disappointment when he moved from a prestigious career in nuclear engineering to pursue a love of magic, and Ant and Dec had to step in as fatherly figures. I'm like, wow. So that kind of taught me a lot about what the general public and journalists will pick up on. So I think going forward, I possibly need to be a little bit more clear about some of the stuff where things are a wind up and when they're not. And definitely for like, if I get through to the next round, touch wood, I will be moving away from the Phantom thing because I don't want to think anybody's, oh, no, this guy was the Phantom. Because you're in dangerous territory now, because now it looks like I've gone on and said I am the Phantom when I'm clearly not. Yeah.
Have you said to the press, hang on, I'm not the Phantom, or are you just like leaving it and letting them make their own mind up?
Yeah, I'm leaving it for now. I mean, yeah. I made a video about it and kind of said, listen, look at this video, me in the green screen with the swimsuit on. Thumbs up again.
There it is.
So I've not overtly said, but I think anybody with half a brain cell can put two and two together, I'd like to think.
Now, I want to ask you one more question about the act. I've not seen every Got Talent performance that's ever been done, so I might be missing somebody. But as far as I'm aware, I've never seen any act before where an effect takes place during or after the judging. Like, that whole concept was genius. And I was watching it with my family, with Rylan and Thea and my wife, Sarah. And when Simon Cowell said, you know, the only thing is it wasn't big enough. And then you did that. And then he says, what I liked about it, like she said, that's got to be set up. And I said, look, yeah. I've done Britain's Got Talent. We've done America's Got Talent. He's not going to have a clue what's going on in this act. And she's like, but it's the perfect line. It's almost like it's been fed to it. I'm like, I'm sure that's not the case. And also, I don't think Simon Cowell is that quick-witted, to be perfectly honest. First of all, the whole concept of doing the vanish is cut after the judging. It's a bit of a risky one, because in a way, you're waiting for somebody to say something. And if you don't, you've kind of, how do you make the effect happen? And then the whole Simon thing, You know, like,
yeah, it couldn't have gone any better, really. I had a lot of people that were like, oh, that was good, but yes. So did you tell Simon to say that? I'm like, no, that genuinely, not the judges generally don't have a clue what's going to happen on the night. So when that all happened, I was like, that couldn't have gone any better. The original intention was that do the judging bit, hope it goes well. And then as I walk off, I just tap on the box, it falls apart, and I give it a bit of a see you later. And then I finish on a cool moment. That was the intention. And it just so happened that Simon said, the only thing that was missing is a big finish. And in that moment, I was like, well, this is the time to do it. Don't save it till the end of the judges. Just do it now. And so it became this moment, and it was like, that couldn't have gone any better. And Simon was quick, though, to be fair, when he went, but what I liked about this is the big finish. Like, that was, he was like that with it. So
it was very
and odd. It made a good little TV moment as well. But I can see why people have watched that and go, that's got to be set up, because it's too perfect. But honestly, it wasn't. Yeah, it just worked out really well. And it had it not worked out like that, I would have just done it at the end of the comments. And again, understated, just walked off and he's gone. And then it'd been like, right, he actually did have a big finish.
And it's almost like you didn't need that big moment to get through, but you've done that as well. It's just great. It's really great. So obviously, we don't know if you've gone through or not yet. I know that a lot of the time they leave this to the wire. What's your thought process here? Because let's be honest, it went brilliantly. You were very heavily promoted by BGT beforehand. Your YouTube video that went up after the performance on BGT has had one of the most highest rated views of the whole series so far. It's been all over the press. I mean, the thing that everybody was talking about that for that episode was you. Like, it couldn't have got, and they gave you a lot of time on the program and built you up beforehand, which are always good signs that it's going to go further. What's your thought process? Are you working under the assumption that you're going to go through and putting something together? And if you are you also thinking about the final, or are you just focusing on the semi-final?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, fingers crossed, like, I haven't heard anything yet, but I've touched wood, I'm assuming that if I get through, you know, I'd rather be prepared and then not get through rather than get through and be like, oh my God, what am I doing? So I'm going under the assumption that, like, right, I should be working on something. And the thing is, like with that show, the semi-finals run from every night, Monday to Friday, and then the final is on the Sunday night. So like, you might be on the Friday, then you've got a day off, and then you're doing your final routine that Sunday night. So you kind of got...
That's what happened to Killian the year before. He was on the Friday, and then the Sunday he was doing the final.
Yeah, that is... that's some turnaround, isn't it? So I am kind of going in thinking I need to have two acts prepared. But my main focus is on that first semis act if I get through. And if that is the case, the thing that I've got planned is a pretty big, like, I'm excited to try and do that if I get through.
Oh, is it elevating what you did in the audition, but also staying true to your character on your YouTube channel?
Well, that was the thing. It's like, I set the bar so low magically, because it really, the magic was just a couple of double lifts and a swimsuit, man. Like, it was just so daft. But the semis, like, the magic, like, I can only go up with the magic. And so I think actually it's positioned me in a quite a nice little place to be in that, you know, the magic itself can only get better. But like you say, the main thing for me is the comedy side of things and that character. And if I can go big on both of them, that's the ideal. And then figure out something for the finals. But that's almost like, it's hard thinking about that because you're planning for something that might not happen again. Like, it's the whole thing is a bit of a weird thing to get your head around whilst doing all the content stuff and trying to think about how can I capitalize on this for if I'm trying to transition into more live work off the back of this. Can I do an Edinburgh run, or can I do theater shows, depending on how, you don't know how big it's going to be. And so you've got a plan for success, I think. And so that's why I'm putting together a show, because who knows what's going to come out of the back of this. You want to, like BGT, I mean, any TV thing now, any legacy media, it's kind of, there's so many channels on. Like 10 years ago, I think BGT was a lot bigger than what it is now. So you've only got a few weeks, a month, 2 months, I don't know, when you've got a little bit of momentum. What can you do in that time to capitalize on it? That's kind of where my head's at. So I'm thinking about what can I do for the future, and I'm thinking about transitioning from content into live stuff and having a two-pronged thing. Can I continue what I'm doing in the content world whilst doing the live stuff that is almost going back to where this all started.
And I was going to ask you that as kind of a final question. What is next? Because you've said that you're not necessarily ambitious as such. You are. You wouldn't be where you are now if you weren't ambitious, but you're kind of just making it up as you go in a way. You're just taking the opportunity that comes your way and then just figuring it out as you go, which is kind of working. But, well, it is working. But do you see... Are there any goals on your magical bucket list that you want to hit? Like you've talked about the Edinburgh Fringe. Would you like your own show? Would you like your own TV show? Would you like to go on America's Got, you know, most acts that go on Britain's Got Talent, if they do half decent, they then get invited on America's Got Talent. Are you wanting to crack the American market? Like, where are you wanting to go with this? And also, you know, let's not forget that at Blackpool, you did a lecture to magicians. Like, that's something completely different. I know you said that you didn't want to do... create magic for magicians, but are you thinking maybe speaking? And it might not necessarily be speaking to magicians. It could be TED Talks. It could be, you know, somebody who has the level of success that you've had as a content creator, as somebody on Britain's Got Talent, as a magician. You can very easily, you know, go and get work as a speaker at a very high level very easily. Like, what goals do you have?
Genuinely, my main goal is not to become a dick, right? Because I'm very wary that with all this success and stuff and doing the show, and you can very easily just have a big ego, become very self-obsessed. That's the one thing I'm like, right, no matter what happens, no matter what ambitions you've got, stay true to yourself, because you could easily become a dick off the back of all this, which is a weird thing to say, but... that is where my head's at. I'm quite conscious now of, like, especially now with everything so busy, I'm like, I need to make sure that I'm A, living in the moment, and B, present for others that I need to support. Because, you know, even though you're doing this amazing thing, you've still got a normal life that you need to sort things out. That's the main thing. Outside of that, I'd love to do a comedy magic special for, like, Netflix. I don't think there's, you know, almost like you'd promote a comedy special. I think the world needs a comedy magic special that could go on Netflix and would be its own hour and a half thing, or that's filmed live. That would be amazing. That's a bit of a bucket list thing. But really, I mean, I know it's easy for me to say I don't have any ambition, because, and then you can go, well, you won't be where you are. That's fair. But I genuinely don't have any, like, if that doesn't happen, I'm not going to be unhappy. I'm trying to keep a healthy thing here of, like, this YouTube thing. When I hit 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, genuinely, it actually didn't mean anything to me. And I was quite upset about that, because I was like, if you'd have told me 2 years ago that I would hit 100,000 subscribers, I'd have been absolutely buzzing in that moment. But I got so caught up in chasing the next thing, 50,000, 75,000, 100,000, that by the time I got to it, it didn't mean anything. And so I'm trying to, like, detach myself from goals like that, because I don't think, in terms of my brain, that that's a healthy thing to chase. And so I'm very wary of going, I want to achieve this, because if I don't get that, then I'll be annoyed at myself that I never got to that point. And it's kind of worked out with me almost, and I am almost making it up as I go along with a little bit of a plan. Like, it's easy to say that, but there is a bit of a plan in the background. But yeah, I don't know. Like you said stuff there, like America's Got Talent. I've no idea if I want to do that. If I get the opportunity, maybe. Like, I don't know. But I definitely want to do more live stuff, and I definitely... Like the comedy magic special would be amazing, because that almost feels like a nice bow tied around the YouTube stuff and the live stuff that I used to do. Like, basically, my ultimate goal is, if I can carry on making a decent living, doing things that interest me, then that's great. And then my interests might change in a year or two, and I might decide to do more speaking things, or I might decide I want to release something for magicians. But right now, I'm doing BGT, and that's interesting me, and I'm doing the content stuff. And so I always want to keep... I don't ever want to do something and I feel like, oh, this has become a bit of a job. Because if I'm at that point, I may as well be back in my 9-to-5.
Mm.
So, and think, like I say, things change and things pop up, and what might be an ambition now might not be an ambition in 2 years' time, when maybe I've got kids and I can't go on tour, or doing a TV show just isn't logistically doable because I need to be down in London all the time. Or so I genuinely don't have any specific things like that. I'm just kind of like... And this, I don't know if it's a bit of a wanky thing to say, but people are probably watching this going, oh, okay, yeah, you don't have it. But genuinely, I'm just kind of this whole thing is me going, yeah, what would happen if I did that? Like, I just don't want to look back at my life and think, why didn't you do that when you could? And so I'm almost saying yes to everything, which is probably not a good thing, but well, that's where my head's at.
It's working out for you though, Jack. You know, it's like, if you asked pretty much any magician that I know of, would you like to have the level of success that Jack Rhodes has got right now? I think pretty much every magician would say, yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that in a heartbeat. So it's working.
Yeah, maybe I'm not appreciative enough of that. I think because I've tried to detach myself from it so I don't get obsessed with the numbers and the figures and all that stuff. And that's possibly why it never really meant much when the 100K thing hit, because I've tried to detach myself. And like, if I get nice comments, I almost try and ignore them in the same way I'd ignore hate comments, because if you get sucked into them, you get sucked into them. And so I'm just trying to do my thing. If people love it, great. And if they don't, that's fine. You know, they don't have to watch it, or if they don't like it on BGT, fair enough, that's fine. It don't matter to me. Like, I'm just doing my thing. If I enjoy it, great. And if anybody else enjoys it, that's great. And that should be that. But it's that balance of detaching yourself, but also enjoying it. And you're right there, because yeah, people, and if you'd have told me a year ago, this is where you're going to be, I'd be absolutely buzzing. And now I'm here, I'm like, well, this is normal now. Like, it's, but you've almost got to treat it normal, because if you didn't treat it like it was normal, then your head would be just all over the place all the time, because this is all so overwhelming. That's the constant battle, I think. And you mentioned at the start of this about, like, this has all happened. It almost appears as if, like, it's come out of nowhere. And it kind of feels like that, but it also, it's like, it's that whole thing of the overnight success that took 10 years to make. And it, like, I've been doing this in the background for a long, long time. And so it might almost look like I've come out as a fully formed product in terms of the editing and the style and the ideas and performing the camera and all this different stuff. But this is like a lot of years in the making. And so if I just carry on with that idea of, you know, I don't necessarily know where I want to go, but I'm just going to keep doing what I enjoy doing and hope that it opens up a door to something that is creatively fulfilling, then I'm a happy man.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And I can't wait to carry on watching your journey. I know that you're going to be... I know that you're going to be a success. I really do. Whatever you choose to do in the future. I'm going to finish this whole interview off with one final question. Anybody who's watching this that aspires to be audition on Britain's Got Talent, or make a living out of magic, or become a successful content creator, or whatever it is that they're wanting to do when they watch this, what one piece of advice could you give that person?
Find what makes you you, and capitalize on that. There's a million magicians that can do probably the same tricks, but it's about the way you present them, and it's about your character. And the quicker you find out who you are, the quicker you'll find success in that niche. And that's why I recommend doing the comedy stuff. When I did the comedy stuff, that's when I thought, right, I'm finding out who I am. Self-awareness is a massive thing, especially for magicians. The amount of magicians that have no idea how they come across is, quite frankly, embarrassing. But if you can crack who you are and what makes you different, that will set you apart. And that's the thing you should be thinking about.
Great advice. Absolutely fantastic advice. Jack, thank you so much. I'm hoping I can do a follow-up interview with you at some point, because I have
absolutely
in a year's time.
This has been like a therapy session. It's been great.
It's an amazing story as well, and I'll be supporting you on Britain's Got Talent. I'll be supporting you on YouTube, as I'm sure the entire magic community will as well. For those people who've been living under a rock and they don't follow you, the best it's Jack Rhodes Magic, right? Is it Jack Rhodes?
Jack Rhodes YT on most socials, and then on YouTube it's just Jack Rhodes.
Perfect. So go, and you're on YouTube. You're basically everywhere. If find a social
like
media.
A rash, like a bad rash, just everywhere.
It's just going to be everywhere. So follow Jack on all the social media platforms. And more importantly, if you haven't yet gone and seen the Britain's Got Talent audition, go and do so. You can go check it out. Just Google it. It's on like 16 billion views or something at the moment. It's doing incredible. But Jack, one more time, thank you so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. Cheers.
No problem. And guys, do me a favor, leave a comment down below. I'm sure Jack will see it. And I'll be back again next Saturday with another Thought Magic. But on behalf of the legend himself, Jack Rhodes, I'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic, magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel. Magic TV. Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.